behind. Sure enough, the raptor dived toward a pile of trash just under a small architectural overhang on the left side of the alley. Lorne leapt after him, trying to see what the gang member was reaching for under the garbage. Greenhair hit the ground first, however, tearing into the trash. His palm slammed toward a large yellow activation reader. Lorne had seen readers like these before. They were capable of being utilized only when someone with the right identification pattern touched them. That pattern could be the user's DNA, a subcutaneous chip, or sometimes a skin decoration, like a tattoo. Whatever the activation mode, Lorne knew that if he didn't move fast, he would very shortly find out what the switch was for. Lorne caught the boy's wrist and pulled his arm up behind his back hard. Greenhair let out a cry, and Lorne grabbed his other hand as well. He dragged the struggling youth back to where I-5 and Darsha stood. "Got anything we can use to immobilize him?" he asked the droid. "What a clever idea," I-5 said, handing Lorne a length of rope he had picked out of the trash. "Too bad it didn't occur to you before we were nearly vaporized." Lorne secured Greenhair's wrists, then turned the youth around to face him. "All right, what's the switch for?" Greenhair just stared at him, mouth defiantly clamped shut. Lorne glanced at I-5, who said, "I traced the circuit to an energy source high on the alley wall, about there." The droid pointed up at a rusty vent about 3 meters above the group. Abruptly, his pointing finger deformed, the end irising open. A beam fired 4 times, each hair-thin line of ruby light striking a corner of the vent. Lorne smelled the tang of vaporized metal faintly over the ripe organic scents that filled the alley. The vent cover fell off and hit the ground below with a clang, and he could see the harsh end of a tripod-mounted blaster just inside the hole, motorized, no doubt, and cued to zap anyone not near the activation switch. Wouldn't that have been a nasty surprise? Lorne shook his head, then glanced at Darsha. "Here's a thought," he said. "Maybe you ought to try one of those Jedi mind tricks." Darsha turned her attention to Greenhair. She made a subtle gesture with one hand as she said, "You will show us the way up levels with no more tricks." Fascinated, Lorne watched as the raptor's eyes defocused, and he repeated, "I will show you the way up levels with no more tricks." It was eerie, seeing the ease with which she controlled the boy, and Lorne found himself wondering, not for the first time, if she could do the same thing to him. Their prisoner pointed deeper into the dark alley. "This is the way," he said woodenly. Lorne glanced at Darsha. She nodded. Lorne took the lead. It was a twisty path that Greenhair led them down. At times the way was so narrow and the darkness so complete, it was hard to believe that they had returned to the surface. Darsha kept her senses sharp, but other than an occasional mendicant or vagrant huddled shapelessly in dark corners, they met no one on the route. After another 10 minutes they came to a large round tube, identified as a thermal conduit. Greenhair indicated an access hatch on the side of the pipe. "Through there," he said. Lorne stared at the access hatch on the side of the conduit, then at Greenhair. "You're sure the whammy you put on him is still working?" he asked Darsha. Darsha nodded. "He's not lying. He believes this is the route. Unless he's delusional, this is the way they used to go up levels." "Fine," Lorne said. "I-5, you open it." He stepped back and let I-5 take his place.
"I live to serve," the droid said sarcastically, gripping the access wheel.
He twirled it easily and popped the hatch. No clouds of boiling steam poured out, and the droid looked inside.
"It appears to go up 10 levels at least. There's a ladder on the inside. Anyone ready?"
Lorne glanced at Darsha. Greenhair waited placidly beside them. "Do we bring Fashion Plate here with us, or leave him?" he asked her. Darsha turned to the youth.
"Are there any other traps or codes we need to know to get through the tube?"
The raptor nodded. "Only the door access code at the other end, 11340. The Padawan looked at Lorne.
"Leave him,"
Lorne nodded and untied their captive. Darsha laid her hand on the youth's shoulder and spoke to him one more time.
"You will forget all about us."
"I will forget all about you."
"Be on your way. If danger threatens, you will come to your senses immediately. Otherwise, you will become yourself again after an hour. Go." "And," Darsha added as he turned to leave,
"get a haircut."
Greenhair nodded and wandered off, still in his Jedi-induced daze. Lorne couldn't help smiling at the Padawan again. Not bad. Not bad at all. Darsha followed Lorne and I-5 up the ladder. It was a long, claustrophobia-inducing climb, and on top of all the other exertion she had been through, it was fairly grueling. But the thought of finally leaving the lawless abyss that was the Crimson Corridor helped propel her upward. There was another access hatch at the top, which I-5 popped open easily. They followed him through. They were in a large chamber that, by the look of it, once had been a central power dispensing agency for several blocks worth of buildings. It was 2 stories high and filled with conduits of all types, a bewildering array of catwalks, and what looked like several old thermal generators. At some point, the plant must have been closed down and turned into a storage facility. At the far end of the room was a thick durasteel storage chamber designed for hazardous wastes. I-5 took a look inside it. "More junk," he reported, "including a small carbon freezing chamber." The droid looked around the room, noticing the various containers of fuel and tanks of gas for welding stacked all over the place. "I wouldn't fire any blasters if I were you," I-5 said to Lorne.
"If I have anything to say about it," Lorne said with heartfelt intensity, "I'll never fire a blaster again."
Darsha looked at I-5 and would have sworn the droid was smiling. Across the room was a door. There were several windows in the upper walls, and through them streamed bright sunlight. She grabbed Lorne and hugged him.
"We made it!"
He looked surprised, then uncertain, then surrendered to the moment and returned the hug. Before he could say anything, however, Darsha felt her joy wash away in a flood of dread. She could feel him before she could see him. She let go of Lorne and spun toward the door, lightsaber already in her hand. The door opened. The Sith was there. For a few incredibly long heartbeats, Darsha was paralyzed by shock, defeated by her emotions. Fear, despair, and hopelessness clawed at her, sapping her will. She faced the ultimate enemy. The Sith was far more powerful than she in the Force. He had slain Master Bundara, one of the Jedi's best fighters. "Give up," an insistent voice in the back of her mind whispered. "Drop your weapon. Give up." But as the Sith activated his lightsaber's twin blades, years of training that had grown almost into instinct flared within her. The council of despair in her head was stilled. She embraced the Force. "There is no emotion, there is peace." Her fear evaporated and was replaced by quietude. She was still conscious of the fact that the Sith was well capable of killing her, but it was a distant concern. If death was inevitable, then what mattered was how she faced it. "There is no ignorance, there is knowledge." She had attended a lecture on battle techniques given by Master Yoda earlier this year, and the memory of it came back to her now. Yoda had faced the assembled students and spoken, his thin, reedy voice somehow carrying to the far corners of the lecture hall without benefit of amplifiers.
"Better than training, the Force is. More than experience or speed it gives."
And he had given a demonstration. 3 members of the council, excellent fighters all, had come forward and attacked him. Master Yoda had not been armed and had not seemed to move more than a meter or so, his tread slow and measured. Nevertheless, none of the 3 had been able to lay a finger on him. The lesson had struck powerfully home. Knowledge of the Force was infinitely better than technique. How many times had Master Bundara told her to simply relax, to let go? She did so now, feeling herself reach a deeper place in the Force than she had ever been before. How she knew this, she could not say. It simply was. She felt her senses heightened to diamond sharpness, and every feature of the abandoned power station came into focus, both the visible and the invisible. She knew every wall, door, and piece of machinery, every particle of dust. And she knew what she had to do. With a small wave of her hand behind her, Darsha telekinetically pushed Lorne and I-5 backwards, sending them shooting dozens of meters into the storage chamber that she knew had been designed to be strong enough to hold dangerous, volatile waste. The hatch slammed shut. The Sith would not be able to reach them immediately, which would give her time. With a thought, she scrambled the lock mechanism so that the door could not be opened. Then ignited her lightsaber, its golden glow shining in the dimness of the old power station. The twin ruby blades of the Sith's lightsaber spun as he leapt toward her, and she stepped forward to meet him. Lorne pounded on the door of the waste containment chamber, but it would not open. "Darsha, open the door!" He tugged frantically at the latch, but the lock mechanism had been scrambled. This was madness. What had she done? She had to know she had no chance against the demon who had killed her master. The three of them together, with I-5's finger blasters and his own blaster, might possibly be able to take him, but there was no way she could face him alone. She was going to die. After her, in all probability, he would be next. But Lorne barely thought about that. All that mattered was getting that hatch open so that he could reach her, somehow help her. "I-5, get us out of here," he shouted. When the droid did not respond, he turned to see why. I-5 had powered up the carbon freezing unit. A cloud of bilious smoke, carbonite vapor, misted the small chamber. "What are you doing? She's going to die out there."
"Yes," the droid said. "She is."
Darth Maul felt a change in the Force as the woman stepped forward. Interesting. She was more powerful than he had thought. It did not matter, of course. He, who had trained his entire life to kill Jedi, could certainly not fail to kill a mere Padawan. Maul twirled his twin blades in an overhand arc, the better to separate her upper body from her lower. And she caught the strike on her weapon's yellow length of plasma, deflecting the first blade, then sparking on the second to twist it past. He changed direction, stabbing forward in the form known as Striking Sarlacc to pierce her heart, which was deflected by her in a downward stroke, the tip of her blade then arcing out to gut him. But he wasn't there, having backflipped to land in a defensive posture. Darth Maul bared his teeth at her. For a Padawan, she was a worthy opponent. No Jedi Master lived within the Force more fully than she did at this moment. But he was going to kill her. He knew it, and so did she. There is no passion, there is serenity. It was true. Every action she took was committed and well-defined, but there was no emotion, no conscious thought preceding it. The Force guided her, helped her make the lightning-fast movements necessary to deflect the Sith and even to counterattack. But it was not enough. The Sith dived forward, striking left, right, left, in a series of attacks that left her winded, even assisted as she was by the Force. She deflected, forcing her mind to disengage from following his technique, to relax and maintain her deep connection to the Force. Thoughts were a hazard. He did not share that weakness. She could feel the truth of that. He had more conscious control of the power at his command, and that gave him the edge. If she tried to increase her control of the Force, she would reduce her ability to simply react. But if she did not, she could only defend. The problem reverberated within her as she maintained her connection with the environment, her senses reaching out, her mind searching for answers. When she found one, she tested it and realized it was her only chance. Lorne grabbed the droid's arms and tried to pull him away from the unit's controls. He might as well have tried to pull a skyhook down from orbit.
"What are you doing?"
I-5 did not stop working as he answered.
trying to ensure that her sacrifice is not a futile one.
It won't be if you'll just blast that damn door open.
I-5 kept talking, his voice maddeningly even. Even my reactions are no match for the Sith's. And I am far faster than you and Padawan Asant. She is doing for us what her master did for her, buying time.
What good will that do? We're trapped in this chamber.
With a carbon freezing unit that can be adapted to put us both in cryostasis.
Sheer surprise kept Lorne from protesting for a moment. The droid continued.
It's theoretically possible for living beings to be frozen in a carbonite block and later revived. I read an interesting treatise on the subject once in Scientific Galactica.
Lorne turned, a snarl building deep in his throat, and aimed the Sarin's blaster at the hatchlock. One way or another, he was going to reach her.
Stop!
I-5 commanded.
This chamber's magnetically sealed. The ricochet would most likely destroy us both.
Lorne spun about and pointed the blaster at I-5.
Get over there and open that door, he said in a voice that did not sound remotely like his own, or I'll blow you to scrap metal.
I-5 turned his head and looked at him for a moment. Then the droid reached out and grabbed the blaster, taking it away from Lorne before the latter had time to pull the trigger.
Now listen to me, we have one chance to survive this, and it's not a very good one. The Padawan has no chance. She knows this.
He finished entering a final bit of data on the unit's control panel.
Get into the unit, he said.
Lorne stared at him, then turned and looked back out of the hatch window. He couldn't see Darsha or the Sith directly, but he could see their shadows moving on the floor. Cast by the light from the high windows, he realized they had taken the battle to one of the overhead catwalks. He had known her for barely 48 hours. And in that time, he had gone from hating her and everything she stood for to this frantic pain, this frustration, this welter of emotions he had not allowed himself to feel for years. He did not love her. There hadn't been enough time for that. But he had come to feel fondness for her, to deeply respect and admire her, if all the Jedi were like her. He didn't want to finish the thought. He forced himself to. If all Jedi are like her, then what happened to Jax was the best thing for him.
Hurry, I-5 said. The unit's on a timer. We have less than a minute.
Lorne pressed his face to the transparasteel, trying to get a last look at her. He failed. I-5 took him gently but firmly by the shoulders and turned him away from the hatch. Lorne let the droid lead him over to the carbon freezing unit. He felt no fear as he stepped into it. The temptation was to not feel anything at all, to just be numb. No, he told himself. He had lived too long that way. If these were to be his final moments, which they could very well be, the odds of the droid's plan succeeding were slim indeed. He would not live them in an emotional void. It was the very least he could do in acknowledgement of her sacrifice. He stepped into the open cylinder of the device. I-5 crowded in beside him. Lorne looked at the droid. If we come out of this alive, he said, I'm going to kill that Sith. I-5 did not reply. There was no time. Lorne felt freezing cold steam boiling up around him. His vision was obscured by mist, which turned to darkness, a darkness as deep and complete as death. Darth Maul felt a slight disappointment as he realized that the Jedi was not truly as powerful as she had first appeared. Her depth in the Force was impressive, but her methodology did not match it. Both of them knew it was only a matter of time now. He focused his attacks, forcing her to use a more technique-based defense. She leapt down to the floor, and he followed her. He felt a force-powered pressure move toward him and deflected it, sensing several large tanks and canisters being shoved around behind him. She was growing weak. Such an attack was a sign of desperation. Soon it would be over. He dived forward, rolling to come up alongside her, deflecting her attack as he did so. Another invisible pressure wave knocked over more equipment behind where he had been, pitiful. Maul thrust upward with his blade and was met with hers, thwarted for the moment. A deliberately left weakness in his attack was not exploited, and again he felt a loss of respect for her. It was too bad, but there would be other missions, other challenges more worthy of his skills. Someday the Jedi Temple would be in ruins, and he would be there to see it, after having killed many of the Jedi himself. But now it was time to end this. Darth Maul readied himself for the final strike. Darsha sent a second wave of the Force outward, tumbling over yet another tank of fuel. She had managed to move several welding cylinders and fuel cells toward each other. They were heaped together now, an extremely explosive accident waiting to happen. How appropriate, she thought, to use Master Bandara's sacrifice as an example. Darsha let herself think of Lorne for a moment. She hoped the droid had figured out the potential for escape that the carbon freezing unit represented. If not, then her sacrifice would be in vain. She had seen Lorne's face in the hatch window, his expression full of desperation and concern, not for himself, but for her. It had most definitely not been the expression of someone who hated her. It was too bad, she thought. If they had had more time, if they'd been able to see this through to the end, reach the Jedi Temple together. But that was not the way it was fated to be. There is no passion. There is serenity. She thrust at the Sith, her lightsaber thrumming, and moved into a better position. She had to get this just right, make it look like it wasn't deliberate. She left herself open. The Sith immediately took advantage of it. His blade pierced her side, a fiery hot jet of pain that caused her to cry out. Darsha Asant released her lightsaber, using the Force to send it forward, still lit, to pierce one of the gas cylinders. She had time for one last thought. There is no death. There is the Force. She knew it was the truth. Darth Maul saw his opponent's strategy, realizing what she planned to do, nearly too late. He jumped, using the Force to propel him upward toward one of the high windows. He smashed through it easily and landed on a nearby walkway as the explosive canisters within detonated. Her actions had cost him the pleasure of killing his primary target. Maul offered a smile to her memory. Not all could fight so well. This was to be honored. A crowd was beginning to gather. He had to make sure his mission was complete, and that was best done quickly. He leapt back to the window he had just broken through. Smoke was pouring from it now. Through it, he could dimly make out the inferno that the chamber had become. He used the Force to momentarily dissipate the clouds and saw below him the waste containment unit that his target had hidden in. The contained pressure wave of the explosion had ripped it open. Maul could see shattered and twisted pieces of equipment. Nothing could have survived that. He saw no trace whatsoever of either the Padawan's or Lorne Pavan's bodies. The explosion had vaporized them. His mission at last was complete. Still, it behooved him to be absolutely certain. After all, Pavan had proved extraordinarily hard to kill, had even survived a previous explosion. Maul had to make sure. He asked the dark side, sending investigatory vibrations throughout the chamber, searching for any signs of life. There were none. Excellent. Darth Maul dropped back down to the walkway. Paying no attention to the milling onlookers, he pulled his cowl up and walked away from the burning building. It was time to inform his master of his success. At last. Obi-Wan Kenobi sensed death as he once more neared the site of Master Bandara's wrecked skycar. It wasn't the Jedi's passing that he had noticed earlier. This was something new. As he drew closer, he saw smoke rising from the street and noticed strobes flashing from police cruisers surrounding the area. Obviously, some new disaster had occurred here, one important enough to bring the local law enforcement out. After leaving the Tuscan Oasis, he had decided to return to the last place that Darsha and Master Bandara had been seen, which was in the latter's sky car. A floating barricade warned the Padawan to stay back, and for a second, Obi-Wan considered doing so. But then he felt it again, the sense of foreboding that had so unnerved him when he had been at the site before. As he landed just outside the scanning line of police lasers, two plainclothes investigators, a Melissi and a Sulliston, both of whom looked like they'd rather be anywhere but here, made their way to intercept him. The Melissi spoke first.
"Can we help you?"
Obi-Wan decided to see what response he got with part of the truth. There was no reason for them to know that two Jedi Knights had gone missing. "I've been following reports of a criminal who has been operating in the area. Apparently there have been some assaults." He let his statement taper off, focusing on the reactions of the pair, hoping to provoke a response. "I was led to believe that there might be some connection here." The Sulliston looked at the Melissi.
"Well, yeah, there might be. Come, have a look."
Obi-Wan followed the two over toward a new piece of wreckage, perhaps half a block from Master Bandara's vehicle. Although it had been badly burned and the metal twisted in the heat of the fire, it was plain that a large section of the police unit had been sheared away, and there was a cut through the canopy where the pilot droid would have sat.
"Any ideas, Padawan?"
"Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi." The Sulliston spoke.
"Recognize the skycar type?"
Obi-Wan shook his head. "Is there any significance to it?" The investigator nodded.
"This is, or was, a PCBU, police cruiser backup unit. They're specifically designed to aid officers answering calls in places like the Crimson Corridor. SOP is to hover back 10 meters up 15 meters from answering units."
Obi-Wan could see the problem they were wrestling with. How could someone get 15 meters into the air to reach the PCBU without getting shot? "Was anyone killed?" he asked, although he already knew the answer.
"Two patrol officers," the Melissi said. Obi-Wan nodded to the two investigators. "This may be the work of Black Sun operatives. I will contact the temple regarding this. You will have the full cooperation of the Jedi in this matter."
So saying, he turned away, heading back to his sky car.
This matter had now grown too large to be dealt with by one Jedi Padawan. Given possible involvement with Black Sun and now the death of two Coruscant officers, Obi-Wan knew that the only prudent thing to do was to report back to his superiors. A full-scale investigation would have to be launched in cooperation with the security forces. He raised his sky car up to around the 10th level, below the lowest stratum of traffic, but high enough to ensure a relatively straight course back to the temple. Whatever was going on, he was certain now that it involved far more than just the disappearance of Master Bandara and Darsha. Darth Sidious could feel a slight disturbance in the Force before his scrambled comlink chimed, and knew by this that his apprentice was about to contact him. He stepped to the holoprojector and activated the grid. Privacy failsafes glowed green before he spoke.
"My apprentice, your mission is complete."
It was a statement, not a question. Sidious knew Darth Maul would not call to report failure, and there were no untoward signs in the energies that surrounded his image.
"Yes, my master. The Jedi Padawan died in combat. She fought well for a neophyte. An explosion generated from our battle destroyed Lorne Pavan and his droid."
Darth Sidious nodded. He could feel the truth of the statement even at this distance.
This was excellent news. "I will require you to bring the holocron to this location."
Sidious gave Maul the coordinates and the specialized instructions his apprentice would require to get past the security droids.
"Be most wary, my apprentice. Our stealth is vital. The Jedi will be most unhappy at the loss of two of their number, and will be searching for answers. You must see that they find none."
Darth Sidious did not wait for a response. None was necessary. With a gesture, he closed the relay, breaking the connection. It was time to make other preparations. Time to finally put into motion the plan that had taken decades to set up. The strategy that would culminate in the final destruction of the Jedi. Soon. Very soon. Obi-Wan pushed the skycar to the maximum safe speed, swooping through the narrow maze of streets and buildings. Suddenly, his attention was distracted by a rumble and a flash of orange light two streets over. He brought his skycar to a stop on a landing platform and walked cautiously closer to the inferno, using the Force once more to try to discern what had happened. His senses expanded into the building, detecting no life, but picking up the residual disturbances of a powerful struggle. He could sense Darsh's presence, and the same tendrils of evil that had plagued him all day. Looking around, the Padawan noticed a section of burned rubble that had been blasted from the entrance. Something gleamed in the debris, and he stepped forward to see what it was. Shock sent waves of jangling sensations up his body, and he had to still himself. Force his mind to unclench and accept what he was seeing. He used the Force to grasp the shiny bit of metal, pulling it out of the rubble, bringing it to his hand. It was the twisted, melted hilt of a lightsaber. Its body scorched almost beyond recognition. Almost. In practice duels at the temple, two Padawans traditionally exchanged salutes prior to their match, raising their lightsaber hilts to their foreheads before igniting the energy coils. Obi-Wan had noted more than once the carefully wound wire grip on Darsh's weapon, a unique design. The same design he was looking at now. The Force confirmed it as if there were any doubt. Darsha Asant was dead. Obi-Wan Kenobi stood quietly looking at the hilt in his hand. There is no emotion. There is peace. How he wished it was so. Lorne stared up at the brightest light he had ever seen. He felt brittle, as though he might crack into countless pieces if he tried to move. There was a strange ringing in his ears, an odd smell in his nostrils. His eyes refused to focus. Everything seemed dreamlike. He had no idea where he was or how he had gotten there. Abruptly, the light, which he now realized was the sun, was blotted out by a familiar face.
"Good, you're awake. How do you feel?"
Lorne moved his jaw experimentally, found that he could speak without too much difficulty. "Like a battle dog's chew toy." He sat up, his vision still blurred, a multitude of aches trying to drag him down. What happened? I-5 didn't reply for a moment.
"You don't remember our recent situation?"
Lorne looked around him. He and the droid were on a small setback roof about halfway up the side of a building. The last thing he remembered... He turned and looked in another direction. Perhaps 50 meters away was the building they had been trapped in by the Sith. He remembered Darsha opening the door, remembered seeing the Sith framed in the doorway, but nothing more than that. He said as much to I-5. The droid nodded.
"Loss of short-term memory, not surprising, given the trauma of recent events and the carbon freezing."
He helped Lorne to his feet.
"Can you walk?"
Lorne tested his balance. "I think so."
"Good. The authorities will no doubt be here soon, but with any luck, Tudun Sahl will arrive before they do."
Tudun Sahl. For some reason, the name triggered more flashes of memory.
"You froze us in carbonite."
I-5 nodded.
"The waste treatment chamber we were in was set up to contain volatile materials for transport. It was simply a matter of readjusting the parameters for..."
It hit Lorne then. Like a stun grenade at close range.
Darsha.
The sunlight, so much brighter than he was accustomed to, faded momentarily back to the grayness of down levels, I-5's mechanical hand gripped his upper arm, steadying him. Darsha, the Jedi Padawan, the woman with whom he'd shared the last tumultuous 48 hours, the woman who'd come to mean, in that short and intense time, more to him than anyone except Jax and I-5, Darsha was dead. No, it couldn't be. The droid and he had managed to cheat certain death. Surely there had been some way that she, too, might have? He looked desperately at I-5, saw that the droid knew what was going through his head, and read, somehow, in the other's metallic, expressionless face, the truth. They had escaped because she had bought them time, had bought it with her own heart's blood. That part came back, too. She was gone. "What happened?" he asked dully.
She managed to stack some of the flammable containers together during her battle and ignited them as she was struck down.
Struck down. Lorne was quiet as they made their way to the roof's edge. "Why aren't we dead?"
"Carbonite is extremely dense. It survived the explosion, and since we were encysted within it, so did we. There was a process timer which I set to thaw us after a half hour. Then I thought it prudent for us to relocate."
Lorne nodded slowly. "What about the Sith? Did he survive, or did he die with—" He could not bring himself to finish the sentence.
"Unknown. If he did survive, which, were we dealing with anyone else, I would deem extremely unlikely, then in all probability he thinks we're dead. The carbon freezing lowered all biological and electronic processes to a level far too faint for even a master of the Force to detect."
A pinging sound came from I-5's midsection.
"That would be our ride,"
the droid said, pulling the comlink out of his torso compartment and activating it. He confirmed their location and toggled it off. Within seconds, a large black sky car with a canopied roof and dark windows dropped toward them, its side doors opening when it reached their level. Lorne looked in and saw that Tudensal himself had come to pick them up.
"I'm wondering what you two have gotten yourselves involved in this time," Sal said as the chauffeured sky car lifted away from the scene. He glanced out the tinted window at the destruction below, "but given what I see down there, I'm not sure I want to know."
"A wise decision," I-5 said as he leaned over to look out the side window. "The less you know, the less they can indict you for."
The sky car was drifting higher, heading toward a traffic lane that would take them to Eastport, where one of Sal's restaurants was located. I-5 tapped Lorne on the arm and pointed out the side window.
"You may not want to see this," he said.
Lorne looked out the window and saw a tiny figure in black striding along one of the elevated walkways below. He felt his insides ice over as if he'd been plunged once more into carbonite. He got only a glimpse of the figure, who was pretty far away, but it looked like... His throat was dry. He had to swallow twice before he could speak. "Got enhancers on this crate?" he asked Tudensal, who was slouched on the cushioned bench across from him. The restaurateur was a Sakian, short, stocky, and possessed of skin that looked like burnished metal. He nodded and tapped a control alongside the window panel. The air car was the epitome of plushness. Tiny drink dispenser, high-powered comlink, and an interspecies climate control. Instantly, in response to Sal's command, the tiny figure below became much larger, zooming to fill up half the window. His cowl was up, covering his face, and the enhancement threatened to break up the image into component blocks of digital artifacting, but Lorne recognized him nonetheless. It was the Sith. As he watched, the cowled killer pulled something from his belt compartment and held it up to look at. Lorne wasn't surprised to see the holocron in the Sith's hand.
"Friend of yours?" Sal asked.
Lorne shook his head. "Not at all, but I'd like to keep track of him. Do you mind if we take a little detour?"
"No problem. I owe you, Lorne."
Sal toggled the switch and gave the droid chauffeur the instructions. They began to follow the cowled figure at the maximum visible distance, just barely keeping him in sight. Darth Maul reined in his connection to the dark side and made his shadow within it as small as he could. His master was right. It would not do to succeed in silencing the enemies of the Sith, only to reveal himself to others of them through a mistake. The apprentice hailed a cab. With his speeder bike destroyed and the one he'd taken from the patrol no doubt dangerous to use by now, he needed transportation to take him nearer to the abandoned monad where his ship was located. As the air taxi lifted off, its driver having been given directions, Maul kept an eye out for followers. It was unlikely there would be any, since almost all who had seen him had died, or were 10 or more levels below. But his master had ordered stealth, and thus it would be. Lorne and I-5 watched the dark figure alight from the cab and walk toward the upper entrance of an abandoned monad. They watched for a few more minutes until the Sith reappeared on the rooftop. A few seconds later, they saw him step into thin air and vanish. "Nice trick," Tutensal said. Lorne just stared, completely baffled for the moment, not sure whether to believe his eyes. Was this some new arcane power of the murdering Sith? But then he heard I-5 say in answer to Sal's comment,
"He must have a high-grade cloaking device, probably crystal-based."
Of course, their nemesis had gotten into a cloaked spaceship. It made perfect sense, Lorne thought. The Sith had accomplished his mission. He had gotten the holocron and, as far as he was concerned, killed everyone who knew anything about it. He was no doubt preparing to leave Coruscant. "Only I'm not dead, you murderer. You think I am, but I'm not." The question for Lorne was, what was he going to do now? He had never wanted to be a hero. All he had wanted was to live a quiet, normal life with his wife and son. But his wife had left him, and the Jedi, those whom the galaxy looked upon as heroes, had seduced him into giving them his son. He would never have called any Jedi a hero, until he met Darsha Asant. He took a deep breath and looked at Tudensal. "We need a spaceship," he said. His friend nodded. "I-5 told me, no problem. Where do you want to go?" Lorne looked back down at the roof of the monad where the Sith had been visible until a moment ago. "Wherever he's going." Darth Maul settled into the pilot's chair. He pressed his hand to the sensor plate on the console before him, and the hemispheric control chamber filled with various hums, tones, and vibrations as the infiltrator powered up. A quick outside scan revealed nothing in the immediate area that would interfere with his launch. Maul nodded in satisfaction. Darth Sidious's plan for the trade embargo and eventually the destruction of the Republic could now proceed unchallenged. Maul pulled the holocron from one of his belt compartments and looked at it. Such a small item, and yet the repository of so much potential power. He returned it to the compartment, then activated the vertical repulsor array. He watched on the overhead monitors as the monad's rooftop fell away from the ship. The infiltrator's nav computer began plotting directional and velocity vectors that would take him to the rendezvous point specified by his master. There, he would deliver the holocron to Darth Sidious, and then his mission would be complete. He wondered what his master had in mind for his next mission. Something relating to the Naboo blockade, most likely. He hoped there would be more Jedi involved. Killing the Padawan had only whetted his appetite. The ship Tudensal provided for Lorne and I-5 was an ARE Thixian 7, a 4-passenger modified cruiser. The craft had definitely seen better days, Lorne thought, as the Skycar settled down next to the ship's berth at Eastport, but that didn't matter. As long as it could fly and shoot, that was all he cared about. As Tudensal arranged for launch clearance via his comlink, Lorne turned to I-5 and said, "Give me the blaster." I-5 returned the Raptor's weapon to him.
As long as you're not planning on trying to shoot me with it again, the droid said.
I wouldn't have shot you. I-5 made no reply to that.
Listen, Lorne continued. I don't expect you to go with me. In fact, it makes more sense for you to go to the temple and tell the Jedi what's been happening. That way, there'll be a backup plan if I fail.
Oh, please. You take on the Sith alone. You've got about as much chance as a snowball in a supernova.
It's not your fight.
Finally, something we agree on. Nevertheless, I'm not letting you go up there alone. You're going to need all the help you can get. Which reminds me...
The droid pulled from his chest compartment what looked like a small white ball. He handed it to Lorne, who looked closely at it. It was semi-transparent, roughly spherical, about half the length of his thumb in diameter, and apparently made of some organic material.
What is it?
A skin nodule from the Dowsin. They're made of specially adapted cells that block receptivity to the Force.
Lorne regarded the ball askance. Now that he knew what it was, he felt revulsed by its touch.
You're saying if I have this, the Sith can't use the Force on me?
I'm saying it may shroud your presence long enough for you to sneak up on him unnoticed. It won't protect you from his telekinetic powers, and it certainly won't do anything about his fighting skills. But it's better than nothing. Now, I suggest we raise ship.
So saying, the droid turned toward the ramp of the Thixian 7. Lorne let him get 2 paces ahead of him, then reached out and deactivated the master switch on the back of I-5's neck. The droid collapsed, and Lorne caught him, settling him to the ground. He turned to see Tuden Sal watching.
Family squabble?
Something like that. I need one more favor, Lorne said. Deliver this bucket of bolts to the Jedi Temple. He's got information they'll want to hear.
Sal nodded. He picked I-5 up under the arms and dragged him over to his sky car.
Lorne watched for a minute, then turned and boarded the ship.
Lorne could honestly say that he wasn't frightened at the thought of facing the Sith alone. Frightened was far too mild a word. He was terrified, paralyzed, totally unmanned by what he was contemplating. He knew he was pursuing a suicidal course of action, and for what? Some quixotic notion of revenge for the death of a woman he barely knew? It was madness. As the Thixian 7 lifted away from the spaceport, he instructed the nav computer to plot the possible trajectories of a ship coming from the surface grid containing the abandoned monad. Within far too short a time, the computer had identified a craft in low orbit, 35 kilometers away. Lorne put it on visual, since the readout said that the stealth mechanism had been deactivated. He stared at the computer-enhanced image of the Sith's vessel. With long nose and bent wings, it was a sleek craft, nearly 30 meters long. The scan readout didn't specify armament, but it looked mean. He settled into an orbit below and well behind his enemy's ship. He didn't know how much protection, if any, the Dowsin nodule would grant him, and he wasn't going to press his luck. The nav computer beeped softly to get his attention and displayed a course vector overlay on one of the monitors. The Sith's ship had changed course. It was now headed for a large space station in geosynchronous orbit over the equator. His mouth dry as paper, Lorne instructed the autopilot to follow. He had no idea what he was going to do when he got there. All he knew was he had to try somehow to stop the Sith, for Darsha's sake, and for his own.
Tuden Sal loaded the deactivated I-5 into his sky car and instructed the droid chauffeur as to their destination. The vehicle lifted away from the spaceport, sliding smoothly into the airborne traffic lanes. He felt sorry for Lorne. In all probability, Lorne was going to die on this crazy quest of his. A shame, but it really wasn't any of Sal's business. He was far more concerned about the droid. The Sakian had never really understood how Lorne could treat I-5 as an equal, even going so far as to call him a business partner.
Droids were machines, clever ones, to be sure, and able in some cases to mimic human behavior to a startling degree. But that's all it was, mimicry. Legally, they were property. Though he'd become somewhat accustomed to it during the year or so he'd known Lorne and I-5, Sol had never completely gotten over the vaguely creepy feeling it gave him to see the two of them interacting as peers. Well, there would be no more of that. He'd had his eye on this droid for some time. The weapons modifications alone would make him a valuable asset. Since Sol occasionally had dealings with Black Sun, it was not a bad idea at all to have a bodyguard, and he was certain that I-5 would make a very good one. Once the droid's memory had been wiped, of course. He wasn't overly concerned with how Lorne might feel about this. After all, he fully expected never to see Lorne again. And even if he did, it wasn't a capital crime to steal and reprogram a droid. The most he could expect in terms of legal repercussions might be a fine, which wouldn't be nearly as much as the cost of a new droid with I-5's special features. No matter how you looked at it, even throwing in that clunker of a ship, it was good business. The temple's roof sparkled in the afternoon sun as Sol's skycar shot by it. Soon, it was lost to sight among the countless other flying craft that filled the skies of Coruscant. The infiltrator settled into one of the space station's docking sleeves, and Maul heard the muffled metallic sounds of the airlock's outer hatch sealing with the stations. He deactivated the life support and artificial gravity systems, then, weightless, he made his way through the ship's dark interior to the airlock. This point of egress to the station was in one of the outlying service modules. Darth Sidious had promised him that there would be neither human nor droid to interfere with his progress, and as Maul emerged from the airlock, he saw that this was so. The lock opened into what appeared to be a service corridor. The artificial gravity was not on in this region of the station. No matter. Maul had operated in zero-G environments before. He pushed himself away from the lock and floated down the corridor, using the impedimenta that festooned the walls to pull himself along. The directions Darth Sidious had given him were clear in his head. He was to proceed down this passageway to the module proper, and then take a vertical shaft up to one of the larger habitation modules. At a prearranged time, less than 15 minutes away, he would rendezvous with Sidious. Maul would then hand him the crystal. And then his mission would be complete. Lorne let the autopilot take care of the docking procedure. He wasn't all that good of a pilot. I'm not all that good at anything, he thought bitterly, except getting those I care about in trouble. He still had the blaster he'd taken from the Raptor, but he only now remembered its power pack wasn't good for more than a few shots. Of course, a few shots would probably be all he would have time for, one way or another. After the green light flashed, Lorne crossed into the service shaft. It had been some time since he'd experienced zero-G. When he could afford to, he used to work out fairly regularly at a spa that featured Nullgrav Sports. He was under no illusions, however, that his familiarity with weightlessness gave him any kind of edge over the Sith. He had no doubt that his opponent could handle himself with consummate and deadly skill in any kind of environment. He would need an enormous amount of luck to pull this off. Once inside the corridor, he moved very cautiously and slowly. He had no idea what he was going to do once the Sith spotted him. He hadn't had time to formulate a plan. If the Dowsan nodule let him get close enough to get off a shot, he had absolutely no compunctions about shooting his adversary in the back, assuming he didn't pass out from sheer terror once he had him in his sights. He reached the end of the corridor. An access shaft led up from here. Before following it, Lorne pulled out the blaster and checked its power supply. What he found was not good. The weapon had enough power left for one shot at maximum setting, or three shots at the low-level stun setting. After a moment's thought, Lorne adjusted the setting to the lower level, figuring it would be better to have three chances of incapacitating the Sith rather than one chance of killing him. Assuming the stun setting would in fact stun him. By now, Lorne wasn't at all persuaded that anything could harm his nemesis. He eased himself into the shaft. It led to a larger, better-lit chamber, perhaps 10 meters by 10, and fairly empty, save for some equipment bins anchored to the walls. At the other end of the chamber was the Sith. His back was to Lorne. He was entering a code on a wall panel, preparing to open a hatch in the far wall. Lorne rose quietly out of the tube and gripped the blaster in both hands. He braced his feet against the edge of the shaft. There would be a slight recoil in zero-G. The dowsing nodule seemed to be doing its job. The Sith was apparently unaware that Lorne was 10 meters behind him and drawing a bead right between his shoulder blades. His hands were trembling, but not so much that he shouldn't be able to hit a target as broad as his enemy's back, especially with 3 shots at his disposal. Once the Sith was stunned, Lorne would finish him off with the lightsaber and then grab the information crystal. The Sith pressed a wall button. A light glowed green, and the hatch started to open. Now, it had to be now. Lorne drew a deep breath, opening his mouth wide so that the Sith wouldn't hear the intake of air. He exhaled the same way, then drew in another breath and held it. He pulled the trigger. The shot was true. The stun bolt nailed the Sith squarely in the middle of his back, hurling him forward to slam against the bulkhead. Lorne fired one more, which hit the Sith's lower back. Lorne couldn't believe it. He shoved himself forward, shooting the length of the chamber toward his adversary, who was now floating limply back toward him in a slow rebound from the impact. Blaster held ready. He had 1 shot left. Lorne grabbed the Sith's robes, pulling the latter around to face him. As he was reaching for the lightsaber, he noticed a sparkle of reflected light coming from a half-open compartment on the utility belt. It was the holocron crystal. Lorne grabbed it and shoved it in his pocket. Then he reached for the lightsaber. He was staring directly into the sinister tattooed face. When the Sith's yellow eyes opened, Lorne froze, mesmerized by that ferocious glare. He forgot about the lightsaber he was reaching for, forgot about the blaster still in his other hand. Then he was hurled back by a blast, unseen but nonetheless powerful, that left him gasping for air. The Sith's lightsaber leapt into a black-gloved fist, both blades flashing into existence. One of them flickered toward him like crimson lightning. Lorne felt a blow to his right hand, saw the hand, still clutching the blaster, go spinning away in slow motion, a few globules of blood following it. He didn't feel any pain, did not in fact realize what had happened until he saw the blackened, cauterized stump at the end of his arm. And now the Sith was spinning around, using the energy of the last blow to rotate himself into attack position again. The moment stretched for Lorne, unbelievably clear and sharp. The Sith's teeth were bared in a rictus of animal hatred. The lightsaber started a horizontal arc that would, in less than a second, shear through his neck. He was floating in front of the open hatch. His left leg was bent, his foot grazing the side of one of the storage canisters. Lorne kicked against it, propelling himself backwards through the hatch. The energy blade slashed through the empty space his neck had occupied a moment previously. He brought his legs up as he sailed through the hatchway. He flipped over in a back somersault, his head coming up and his left arm reaching out for the hatch controls. He saw the Sith hurtling toward him, framed in the opening. His hand slapped the button, and the hatch swung shut in the Sith's face. A red light glowed, indicating the hatchway was sealed. Lorne raked his fingers over the access panel keypad, scrambling the code. Through the hatch's port, he could see the Sith's face, a sight to chill the blood. Then, faintly, he heard the sound of metal beginning to melt and saw a faint blush of red building in the hatch's center. The Sith was using his lightsaber to melt through the hatch. Lorne turned and started pulling himself frantically along the corridor he was in. He didn't know where he was going or how he was going to escape the vengeance of the monster behind him. There was no room in his head for anything, not even the pain of his severed wrist as the shock began to wear off, except raw red panic. For possibly the first time